Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
Welcome to F1 Coffee Corner, Full Beans. I'm your host as always, Terry, and I'm here to keep you up to date with all of the unbiased, hard-hitting Formula One news. So grab your favourite mug of coffee, sit down, strap in and get yourself comfortable to join in the conversation. Because this is F1 Coffee Corner. This is Full Beans, the must-have podcast for all Formula One fans. Welcome to today's episode of F1 Coffee Corner, Full Beans the podcast. I'm your host, Terry, and this week we're going to be taking a dive into little Lando Norris's first win in Miami, a look back at the weekend, a look back at the results, a look back at the upgrades that were brought, and what can we expect going forward. In the Espresso News, we're going to be catching up with all of the latest from the Formula One paddock, and in the Takeaway, that's a part of the show where you, the listener, can get involved. So stay tuned for more on how you can be part of the Full Beans podcast. Now, if you're new around here and this is your first time, please hit that follow, like, or subscribe button, whatever is available to you on the platform you're listening to. And let's get ready for this week's episode. Let's sit down, strap in, and give it some full beans. Okay, Miami. Wow. Miami did not disappoint, did it? We know the results. Lando Norris with his first win for McLaren. Long overdue, long awaited. A lot of people were wondering whether or not Lando Norris would ever do it. However, all of that is in the past. Lando Norris is now a Formula One race winner. Not only that, he's a race winner for McLaren, which is something I'm sure he's absolutely ecstatic about. McLaren are absolutely overjoyed, and rightly so, because this was a performance that warranted the victory. This wasn't a gifted victory. This wasn't a capitalise on the fact that Red Bull crashed out or anything like that. This was McLaren bringing their updates, which we go through in the tech corner part, which I'm going to touch on in a bit, and bringing a pretty much a B-spec brand new car to Miami. And that car absolutely delivering. Now, whether or not this is a start of something bigger and it's a start of this gap to Red Bull closing, or whether or not it's just one of these anomalies that we see like we did in Singapore, it remains to be seen with Red Bull. But one thing is for sure, that the gap is closing, I feel. The competitors are getting a handle on the competition and on the regulations and on the updates, and they are bringing it closer and closer to Red Bull. Will it be enough? It remains to be seen. But let's just have a look at Miami, how it played out, and what happened. I'm not going to go too much into the sprint race. The sprint race pretty much, it followed the format of what we thought was going to be a Max Verstappen dominating weekend. Helped by Lando having that first lap incident and obviously spinning out and going towards the back. Max Verstappen cruised pretty much to victory, Charles Leclerc just behind him. And we thought we were pretty much set for this Red Bull dominance that we've known Max certainly to do in Miami. You know, winner of the past few races here. He's come through the pack a few times. It was looking pretty much on course for history to be repeated. But that wasn't to be. We had qualifying, obviously Max getting pole as well, and it kind of led us into that. This is what's going to happen. But it's completely different on race day. Now, we are going to talk about some of the things that came up. Safety car, damage to Max's car, because they are really valid points that we need to look at and we need to explore and we need to delve into that. So stay tuned for that part as well, because it is really important that we recognise that whilst McLaren had the pace and they won, there were some issues that Red Bull certainly had and were having with regards to the setup of their car, which makes me still a bit nervous whether or not this is a true reflection of the upgraded McLaren taking it to Red Bull, or whether or not it was a combination of a lot of things going into it. But either way, like I said, McLaren won this on pace and strategy, and they deserve to win it. And Lando Norris is a fitting winner for the Miami Grand Prix. And it's kind of given Formula One a shot in the arm. I don't think there was a lot of people who were sad to see Lando Norris win a Grand Prix. We experienced it at Silverstone, I'll come on to that in a bit. Absolutely amazing atmosphere to see Lando Norris win his first Grand Prix on a rooftop at Silverstone Hotel overlooking the track. Couldn't have been in Miami, but it was a good second best, believe you me. But anyway, let's look at the results and see what happened. So Lando Norris in first place for McLaren. Now, Lando, admittedly, at the start of the race, he struggled after that opening lap where Checo kind of kamikazed down, almost, you know, bowling to Max, causing a lot of braking, a lot of manoeuvring, and Lando was the big loser out on that one, ending up behind Checo by the time it all sort of shaked out on the first couple of laps. He had trouble getting past the Red Bull. Now, this is the problem that we're seeing with the DRS and with the pace. Now, McLaren had the pace in that car. However, Lando could not find a way past Sergio Perez. Now, this was a combination of a lot of factors. Now, the DRS on the back straight wasn't as powerful as what it normally is because we had a tailwind in Miami, and that was causing issues in terms of getting the slipstream going on that second DRS zone. Checo, with some great defending, which we know Checo's famous for, wasn't getting enough credit for the commentators, I don't feel. He was putting his car in the right place, he was using his battery in the right places. So where Lando had DRS, Checo was deploying the battery. He was doing a really sterling job at keeping Lando Norris behind him in what was a faster McLaren, ultimately. When Lando cleared Sergio Perez and was kind of hunting down, I think it was Carlos Sainz at the time, you could see that gaps, you know, coming down really quickly once he was in that clear air, showing you the true pace of that updated McLaren. So Lando went hunting down. We know that Oscar, he kept Max honest at the beginning. I don't think he was ever a challenge for Max, but he was keeping that gap at 2 to 3 seconds. Max was doing a lot of tyre management, a lot of race management during that first stint up until sort of lap 23, 24. So Max was managing the pace. So whilst he wasn't pulling away from Oscar, who had 50% of the updates, I must add, he was managing the pace between him and Oscar Piastri. So there's still a chain of thought that says at the beginning, certainly before he struck the bollard, would he have had enough? Personally, I don't feel he would have. Listened to what was told to us from Christian Horner after the race, listened to Max's radio messages, it certainly doesn't feel that the damage he occurred after hitting the bollard, which happened on around lap 23, so just before Max pitted for the hard tyres. So Max was being told to push by GP. He'd been told that, you know, now was the time to try and extend that gap. And he had a snap of the car, went over the bollard. The bollard flew over the top, but on the replays, it showed that the stump of the bollard, which was obviously concreted into the track, actually damaged the underfloor on Max's car. Now, there was damage on Max's car, and I'm the first to admit that there was damage. So any damage to a Formula One car, especially on the floor, will impact performance. It's how much performance did it impact is the unknown. Christian Horner said he was losing 0.2 in the first sector, but went shy of saying how much over a lap that was worth. And he also, when you listen to Max, Max didn't make a complaint. Now, Formula One drivers are tuned into their car. They're absolutely in the zone, these cars. They know exactly how they feel, how they're handling. And I think what was strange for me was, if this flaw made such a difference, why didn't Max pick up on it on the team radio? We never heard him asking to check it apart from that initial contact, which is understandable, but we never heard it mentioned by either him or the team throughout the whole of the race, which makes me think that if you listen to Max post-race in the driver's debrief, he actually said that that bollard didn't impact on the performance. He's later backtracked on that with his statement through Red Bull on their media release, saying that they've obviously inspected the car and they found damage on that one. But post-race, he was adamant that that bollard didn't impact on the performance of the Red Bull. And you've got to believe him in the extent of he's got nothing to hide from it. Whether or not it impacted it and he didn't know remains to be seen. But if it did, we're talking of a couple of tenths. Now, Lando's pace was 0.4 quicker throughout the race. He was definitely going to be quicker. And in terms of leading the race, well, the safety car. Now, I did a whole video on this one on TikTok because there was a lot of confusion over the safety car. Now, the safety car made a mistake. Jeremy Lando picked up Max Verstappen instead of Lando, but that didn't impact on the race because even though it allowed Lando's gap to go up to 30 seconds to make that pit stop, when Berit Mylander picked her up and Max Verstappen, the gap was already around 19 seconds. So more than enough for a pit stop for Lando. It's 11 seconds under the safety car. So even a poor stop for McLaren, there was enough in the bag for Lando to get in and out, even without that mistake from Berit Mylander. So whilst I appreciate it was a mistake and needs to be looked at by the FIA because they shouldn't have picked up the wrong person, it wasn't a mistake that cost the lead of the race. So by the time they all then bunched back up, that 30 seconds that Lando had was kind of irrelevant. And in a way, he was actually disadvantaged because when he was behind the safety car after making his pit stop, he had fresh tyres, they were cold, when actually Max and the rest of the pack had to charge around to catch up with Lando after the safety car let them through. And they would have actually put warmth in their tyres because they were going fast to catch up with Max and catch up with Lando. See, even I made that mistake, catch up with Lando and the safety car. So even though there was a mistake, it would have helped them on the restart, which could explain why we saw Max get a little bit closer to Lando. Didn't overtake him in the end, but was certainly close enough to try and mount a challenge from the off. But then we saw Lando pull out that comfortable gap, 7-8 seconds, and sail off into the win of the Miami Grand Prix. Max Verstappen, obviously in second place, drove really well again. Once again, we rarely see Max making mistakes at the moment. He is a driver at the top of his game, a driver who is the best in the world, no doubt about it. And despite what may be happening with Red Bull off track, it's certainly not been impacting on Max on track performance. Another pole position, that's what, number 7, I want to say, in a row? I could be wrong on that one, but I'm pretty sure it's 6 or 7 in a row for Max Verstappen in terms of pole position. And what we have seen in the past with Max is when he goes and gets beaten in this manner, like he did this weekend, we tend to see Max go on a bit of a run. So I wouldn't be surprised if from him and onwards, we see Max Verstappen really hone in and want to make a statement. That's something that Max enjoys doing. And it's certainly one that I wouldn't bet against, which is why I'm still a bit dubious over whether or not this is going to be the change of a challenge for Red Bull, or actually might we just see a change and Red Bull dominate even more. It really remains to be seen, and it's so up in the air, but it's also a little bit exciting at the same time. It's a little bit of the unknown again. It's kind of getting Formula One a shot in the arm it needed to kind of get the viewers back to say, hold on, something's going on here. Like I say, it might not be anything, and we might get to Imola and Max exactly the same, but you know, we can all hope, can't we? Because ultimately, even the most, you know, Red Bull fan will want Max to win with a challenge. They will want to see close racing. Ultimately, they support Max and they support Red Bull, and they want to see their team, their driver, win the championship. But I'm sure even the most sort of loyal Red Bull fan would want to see Max Verstappen fighting for a championship and then winning that championship due to a title fight. So fingers crossed, this is the start of certainly McLaren and Ferrari coming back into it. But Charles Leclerc, third place. He would have enjoyed being above Carlos Sainz. We know that Carlos and Oscar Piastri were obviously jostling, banging, doing whatever they were. Carlos, we'll come on to Carlos, but was having a bit of a whine on the radio about Oscar and how he should give places back, and telling McLaren to, you know, make sure that Oscar gives him the place back. Was never going to happen, Carlos. Let's be honest about it. Sergio Perez, very understated race from him, in the sense of he wasn't mentioned much on the commentary, but again, a solid performance, 12 points in the race itself for Checo, and a driver who I'm sure Red Bull are going to reward with a new extension, maybe only for 1 year, but I'm pretty confident we're going to see Checo and Max again for 2025. Carlos, like I said, in fifth place, obviously tangled with Oscar. Oscar ended up losing out due to various battles and that front wing damage that he got, and ended up falling to the back of the pack at the end of the race. Really unfortunate for him because he was driving an absolutely stellar race, like I say, on 50% of the updates for McLaren. Then we got Lewis Hamilton, sixth place in Mercedes. I bet he can't wait to get his hands on that Ferrari. Let's be honest about it. He looks like a driver who's got one eye on the exit, I'm not going to lie. But then he's also got a car that's not performing as well. So Mercedes look completely lost. They look like they're completely in a world of they don't know what's going on in terms of the car development or where they're going. Imola should bring some upgrades. We know they're doing some rookie tests with Kimi Antonelli going up against Mick Schumacher and trying to figure out what to do on driver pairings as well. It seems like Toto needs to kind of get a grip with Mercedes because they're having their worst season in a long, long time. And also they're in real danger of their customer teams embarrassing them if they don't get their act together pretty fast. So yeah, really tough times to be a Mercedes fan, that's for sure. Then Yuki Tsunoda, 6 points in the Visa Cash App RB. What a weekend for Visa Cash App RB. Points on the sprint, obviously on the Saturday with Daniel Ricciardo's amazing performance, and also Yuki picking up a point. And then, of course, Yuki in the race itself picking up 6 points. Much needed for Visa Cash App RB. They will be absolutely delighted that their slight upgrades that they brought made a difference. Got Yuki in points. Daniel had a topsy-turvy weekend. We know he took that grid penalty for the start of the Grand Prix. He ended up starting the Miami Grand Prix in last because of that grid penalty. Tale of two halves. Saturday, he was the hero in terms of the sprint race itself. Sunday, the villain, because he just couldn't get anywhere near the point. So I think Daniel Ricciardo would be happy with his sprint performance. He kind of showed glimpses of what he can do. I think he will be buoyed by that, and hopefully he can take that into Imola and get a good result for them. But the Visa Cash App RB team certainly look like they're on the up. George Russell, 8th place in the Mercedes. Pretty understated weekend for George. Beaten by Lewis comprehensively. Wasn't the races really. Really struggled with the setup of the Mercedes and didn't really look like he was anywhere in either the sprint or the race itself. So I think all in all, it's going to be a race to forget for George Russell. Then we've got Fernando Alonso in the Aston Martin in 9th place. Fernando Alonso, again, the Aston Martin's pace just looks to have disappeared. Made that massive gain last season in terms of, making that step up early season last year. Haven't made that step up over the winter. Have been overtaken by both McLaren and also Ferrari, and are pretty much in danger of now falling back down the pecking order unless they can get an update pretty soon on that AMR24 to sort that one out. Really struggling for pace and setup, really struggling to make a dent into the podiums, unlike last year. Really poor weekend again for them. Esteban Ocon at 10th place, Alpine. What a point for Alpine. That will feel like a win. We had the news last week of David Sanchez joining, obviously released from McLaren after joining them from Ferrari. So really good deal for Alpine, actually. So he saw out his garden leave, went to McLaren, didn't get on, got released straight away. And with no garden leave, they let him go straight to Alpine. So absolutely brilliant move for them. Esteban Ocon running the new updates onto the Alpine. Got a point, well deserved. Him and Pierre Gasly were going wheel to wheel on the opening laps. Really good racing, really good to see. Kind of had your heart in your mouth thinking they're going to take each other out. But bottom line is they didn't. And Ocon nicked a point. Then we've got Nico Hülkenberg, 11th place. We'll be disappointed at that. Has to expect more around Miami. They expect to certainly be above Alpine and probably challenging Aston Martin. So they're going to be disappointed with 11th place. Pierre Gasly, 12th place in the other Alpine. Good result for them, like I said. Updates are starting to work a bit more. They'll be glad to just be off the back of the grid and be competing once more. Oscar Piastri, like we said, 13th place. Had that wing damage, fell to the back, put some mediums on to try and come through. Obviously couldn't do enough towards the end of the race to actually get through on that one. Joe Wang Yu in the Sauber in 14th. I don't know what to say about Sauber. They're kind of treading in the middle at the moment, waiting for Audi to take over. We had this last year when they're Alfa Romeo. We're seeing a lot of it this year. Lots of shenanigans around pit crews, which we'll come on to with Valtteri Bottas in a minute. Lots going on. Obviously, Nico Hülkenberg confirmed as the driver for Sauber for next season. So it leaves pretty much Joe and Bottas going head to head for the other seat if they don't choose someone else like Carlos coming in. So yeah, really tough times for the two Sauber drivers, that's for sure. Daniel Ricciardo in the Visa Cash App RB up to 15th place. Like I said, I'm sure he'd be delighted with that in terms of where he started. He'd be disappointed that he couldn't convert that sprint performance into a race performance, but even so, good performance from Daniel Ricciardo over the weekend. And it might just give him a stay of execution in terms of the media getting on his back about being replaced. Valtteri Bottas in 16th in the Sauber. Disappointing weekend for him. We expected more. Had a change of mechanic, got a grid penalty. Really poor weekend. He's not happy at Sauber. You could hear that in the press conference when he was talking. He talked about, how he had his race engineer change, how he directed all the media to his team rather than him about why that change was made. Clearly not a choice that he made himself. So yeah, interesting times at Sauber. Lance Stroll, very understated in the Aston Martin 17th place. Really poor weekend from him. And you've got to wonder how long can Aston Martin continue with a driver who's in the top 10 consistently in Fernando, and then a driver who's clearly struggling for performance in Lance Stroll. Alex Albon, 18th place for Williams. Disappointing weekend once again for Williams. They are going to rue this first part of the season as missed opportunities. They should have got some points. They haven't got any points. You've got now Alpine even nicking points. So, yeah, Williams are a team which are going to rue, I think, not capitalising on the early season promise that they had for the first few races of the season. It was great to see Claire Williams back in the paddock. Great to see her talking to people she knew, people new and old in terms of the Williams team, and just seeing her in the paddock again is always good. She had some really positive things to say about the team and how it was great to see so many old faces as well as meet new faces. So, yeah, really good to see Claire Williams in the paddock. Then we got Kevin Magnussen, 19th place, and the last of the classified finishers for the Grand Prix. Kevin Magnussen, 10 penalty points, two away from a race ban. And the way he's going, that's coming in Imola, because he's driving. Now, a lot of team principals getting their back up about this one, because he's driving for the team. He's making the moves in terms, certainly in the sprint when he was, you know, going with Lewis Hamilton. He's making no bones about the fact he's doing it for the team. He's making no bones about the fact he's bending the rules. He's pushing the rules. He's, in fact, breaking the rules. Let's be honest about it. And he's being very open, honest about that, and being very open, honest that he's doing it for the team and for the team only. So it's going to be interesting to see what the FIA do with this one. They're clearly chucking penalty points at him. So he's on 10. So if I was Ollie Bearman, I'd get in that simulator pretty soon and get ready for a call-up, because I think it's about August before the first of Kevin's points actually drop off. So he's going to be on 10 for a while, and I'm pretty confident that he might be facing the first race ban we've seen for a very long time in Formula One. Let's be honest about it. Logan Sargeant, obviously DNF on the back of that tangle with Kevin Magnussen. Heartbreaking to hear Logan at the end of the race, obviously his home race being Florida, and just hearing him on the radio talking about, you know, was it something I'd done wrong? Was it my fault? It just wasn't very good. It felt really bad, and it just felt really wrong to hear him talking that way. And he seems like a driver who's devoid of confidence. And I think it's a case of if and not when Logan Sargeant loses his Williams seat, who too remains to be seen. But yeah, that's pretty much your quick memory roundup. Obviously, like I said at the start of the show, at the top end, yeah, Lando Norris winning his first ever Grand Prix. Like I said, we watched it at Silverstone. We went to the Silverstone rooftop party, the Miami event. We went there last year. They've got it on a giant screen. They've got a open top bar on top of the hotel there, which overlooks the track as well. Really great experience. Cost £50 for the ticket. And then obviously your drinks on top of that one. I think it costs about £100 for the room. You get discount code when you book as well. So I say there, Dad unfortunately couldn't join me because he was working away. Met up with some friends from last year, which always really good to do. Talk to each other sort of online, but don't meet them. Met up with some, you know, creators who I haven't met before. So Karina, Let's Chat F1. So met up with those as well, said hi to those. Always good to actually meet people in person and speak to people, especially people who've supported the page, supported the podcast, have commented on my videos and things like that. So, yeah, really great to meet those people and say hello actually in person. In terms of the Miami Grand Prix and updates, so the one thing I want to talk about, so for those who don't know, every race weekend before the race gets underway, I do a column, a article basically for FanAmp. Now, for those who don't know, FanAmp is a app dedicated to Formula One news. You've got communities on there. You have some amazing creators on there, from fancy Formula team to comedy to tech like myself. There is loads of different options on there, with each creator has a base, so a bit like a Facebook page site where you can go on and make comments and have conversations. They do some amazing competitions. They do some amazing giveaways. We've got a live show for the Fantasy Formula One, which happens before qualifying each week as well. So absolutely loads going on FanAmp, and I'm really lucky to be partnering with them. Yeah, once again this season. It started off last season where it joined halfway for the year, and we started this season in earnest. And they're a great partner, Greg, Caitlin, and the team there, you know, the social media team, they're really good at what they do. And they let me produce my Tech Corner. This is something I've really wanted to do. Those who have been following me for a while will know me for my news and for my videos. One of my biggest ambitions is I want to write, and I want to do sort of media work in that front. And FanAmp have gratefully given me the platform to do it. So every race weekend, I produce the Tech Corner. And I just wanted to take you through it. So if you go onto the FanAmp website, for those watching on the video, you'll see from there. And I pick out my top updates for the week from the list that the FIA produced. So before each race weekend, the FIA, they give us a list of all the updates, and they tell us what updates the teams have made to their cars. Then what I do is I'll then take that, I used some great reporters on X who post the pictures of what these updates are. So I very kindly use theirs to explain with a picture of what those updates look like. And then I'll go through the ones that have caught my eye. So McLaren featured heavily on this weekend's one because they brought no less than 10 updates onto that McLaren. And, you know, like I said at the start of the show, it's pretty much a B-spec car. But if we look at some of the things that caught my eye when I was doing tech updates, so the engine cover cooling loose. So with McLaren, the engine cover has been designed to work with the change of airflow that's come about with the introduction of the new side pod inlets. So these are the little grooves that you see on the engine cover of the Formula One car. The changes they brought are quite simple. With the flow of air moving, with the updates they brought, maintaining the efficiency and benefiting the redesigned cover, the cover has been changed to maximise that airflow and ensure it doesn't have the opposite effect, which is, of course, producing drag and making the car slower. Now, McLaren have also used the opportunity to introduce an update to the cooling loose to help with the airflow, but it's not suggested that the loose will enhance the cooling of the McLaren itself, just more to do with the overall flow. Now, for those who don't know, any sort of air vents that are put on a Formula One car, as per the regulations, they have to provide a cooling element. Now, what the FIA regulations don't do, they don't specify how much of a cooling essence they have to require, just that they have to cool something. So you see those big vents behind the Red Bull drivers that Adrian Newey's put in, they'll be cooling something, but it doesn't have to be specified and it doesn't have to be monitored in terms of how much cooling they actually do make. So there's a lot of talk around, a lot of teams just use that to take the airflow away from where it needs to be and send it back to the diffuser, to the floor, to create downforce. Now, all of the teams do this, it's a common trick, but they will be cooling something on the go there. They also changed the side pod inlets, so they changed the actual design of those as well for the airflow, and they changed the front wing itself to work with the new suspension and the new floor corner and the new floor to direct the airflow. So, like I say, a very substantial update. Those were just the ones that caught my edge for McLaren in terms of what they brought. So you can see pretty much a new front wing, a new suspension, a new floor, a new engine cover, an area around the diffuser, around the beam wing. A lot on that McLaren was brand new. Now, this is, of course, the Imola update that's been pulled forward, and they brought it into the here and now. So they won't be bringing a update for Imola. What they'll be doing is bolting the rest of it onto Oscar's car because he only had half of it. So they've come early with it to get some much-needed data from Miami and also increase performance. So job done on that one for McLaren. Mercedes, just going for the rest of the tech corner, they brought a floor edge. It didn't really make that much difference. Very much it's a more jagged, it's a much more sort of, you know, feisty looking edge to it, whereas the other one was quite a lot smoother, obviously to change the airflow on that one. Red Bull were probably the strangest update I've seen. They actually took away a floor edge support to save weight. Whether or not that made a difference, certainly in Max when he went over the bollard base in damaging the floor, or whether or not that impacted on the stability of the RB20, something they struggled to get in the window all weekend, something that I know Max complained about in terms of the grip levels. So whether or not this removal actually made a difference, and we might see it come back, that's going to be really interesting to see on that one. Aston Martin, they came with 5 updates, but were very much track specific, which were front wing, engine cover, rear wing, beam wing, and chassis scoop for the driver cooling. V-Carb, as we touched on, had a change to the floor body and diffuser. Stake had a front and rear wing circuit specific. Williams had a small front wing update and Haas had a floor body change. So that's my tech corner. Like I say, if you haven't already, head on over to FanAmp, download the app. You can find out all of this stuff. You can find out loads of other stuff from creators and you get daily news, the same as what my page gives you as well. So yeah, that's just an extension of where I produce the F1 Coffee Corner. But if you get a chance, go check it out. And I think that's pretty much it from Miami. Like I say, from my point of view, we saw a lot around the McLaren. Is it sustainable? Has it closed the gap? The reason I talk about closing the gap is when Red Bull is so dominant, as they were with the RB19, Adrian was very open and honest talking about how he was wondering if the regulations were getting to a point where that window to extract performance and make the car even better was getting smaller and smaller. And that's what I mean by have Red Bull sort of maximise their developments. Are they at the point where actually they're making little gains, whereas everyone else is now closing that gap? They're understanding the regulations more. They're understanding their cars more and they're closed in on that Red Bull. But will it be fast enough? I don't know. Will it be enough? I'm not entirely sure. But one thing for sure, like I said, a shot in the arm, a much needed win, well deserved win for McLaren, done on merit, done on pace. And yeah, let's see if Red Bull can bounce back in Imola, or whether or not McLaren are some serious contenders, because actually with them bringing updates this weekend and with the updates we're expecting to get from Ferrari in Imola, we know that Ferrari have got updates they were going to bring to Miami but held them back. So it's exciting times at the top of the grid. And obviously Mercedes and Aston Martin will want to bounce back with their updates and get near the podiums again. So really exciting time for Formula One this year so far. So yeah, that pretty much rounds up my coffee chat and of course the Miami Grand Prix. Let me know your thoughts on that one in the comments. Did you enjoy it? Did you enjoy seeing Lando win? Do you think it's a change to the pecking order, or is it just a one-off anomaly and normal service will be resumed when we get to Imola next week? So without further ado, let's head on over to the Espresso News and let's have a look at what's happening in the world of Formula One. Okay, welcome to the Espresso News. So this is the part of the show where I bring you all of the latest stories from the world of Formula One. Now, for those who follow me on social media, you'll know that F1 Coffee Calling News has a daily news update. It comes out every morning and it gives you a snapshot of the headlines that's happening in the world of Formula One. So what it does is it tells you what's going on really quick, really simple. So if you're not already, go drop my social medias a follow. The handle's the same, whether it be TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, it's all at F1 Coffee Corner, also on Twitter and also on YouTube as well. So the chairman of the United States House Judiciary Committee has opened a probe into Liberty Media's refusal to let Andretti into Formula One. That has to be the biggest news that came out of the past week or so. So Andretti basically has carried on relentlessly with his Formula One bid. He's got his factory open in Silverstone, and it looks like he's got some friends in the Senate who are now looking at an investigation into Liberty Media, saying that they believe that the refusal of Andretti — bear in mind, the FIA said yes to Andretti coming in — it's Formula One management, Liberty Media, who have said no. They're saying it's to do with European bias towards engine manufacturers, and that Formula One management is siding with people like Mercedes, people like Alpine, people like Ferrari, and they don't want an American team and an American engine supplier within General Motors in Formula One. Hard to prove, but with Liberty Media being an American company and American-based, it feels like the Andretti are kind of flexing their muscles a bit on this one to try and get Formula One management to back down and let them in 2026, which is something he talked about, which would obviously see a rebranded engine for the first couple of years until General Motors come on board in 2028. So yeah, really, really interesting story. Intrigued to see how this one goes. Politics and Formula One never go well. We know that Formula One is the most political sport going, but politics and outside influences rarely end in triumph. And I can just see this one just getting very messy before it gets better for all parties involved. Unless, of course, you're the FIA, who can quite easily sit back and claim they're no part of this whatsoever. And this is between Formula One management and Andretti and the House of Senate. So yeah, interesting times ahead. Then we've got ABC TV. They produced a report saying that the Miami audience was 3.1 million, which was up from the previous record for Miami, which is in 2022, of 2.6 million. I'm not sure if this is an American record or a Miami record, but either way, a TV audience of 3.1 million for America is pretty good viewing and kind of flies in the face of people saying that it's on a decline in the States. So I'm sure they have great satisfaction producing that one. We've then got Lando saying that he never doubted that he would win his first race in Formula One. Christian Horner and Red Bull. So Red Bull is all going on. So the other bit of news is Red Bull's Jonathan Wheatley, who's their sporting director, he hasn't signed a new contract. Now, Red Bull have signed — they signed Pierre Rocher, they've signed Enrico Balbo, they've signed Ben Waterhouse. All of those have signed until 2028 on the back of Adrian retiring. They actually did this in December, January time, but Red Bull have decided to announce it, no doubt to stop people kind of poking their nose in. Christian Horner spoke to Sky Sports. He talked about not being, you know, in a position to replace Adrian Newey, because Adrian's role was a free spirit role. It's just something that Adrian did, and it was bespoke to him. So even though Pierre Rocher has been doing a lot of the development of the car, in fact, been doing the day-to-day running, while Adrian has been admittedly dipping in and out of the Formula One development, it's fair to say that there's not going to be a promotion in terms of the role. Whether or not Pierre Rocher becomes a technical, you know, the technical officer once Adrian steps down remains to be seen. But in terms of the role and what Adrian did, Christian was very keen to stress it was one that had been created after years of being in Formula One and something that was bespoke to Adrian. So don't expect to see Pierre Wache take that role on itself. But the big news from Red Bull in terms of contracts are tying those big names in their engineering team down to long-term contracts. So that's great news for a Red Bull fan on the back of, obviously, the Adrian Newey news we brought to you last week. Then we had this sort of tit-for-tat between Zak Brown saying that he's seen loads of CVs flying around, Toto saying he's seen loads of CVs flying around. We had the Red Bull chairman come out and say that he didn't appreciate Toto going after Max Verstappen and that he showed disrespect and that he shouldn't be talking to him. So we've got this like war of words basically once again between Red Bull and Mercedes, and you know, Christian saying that Toto should worry more about the 220 engineers that he took from Red Bull powertrains rather than the one or two CVs, as he put it, that he received. So quite clearly some sore points between those two. Quite clearly some, yeah, moments where they obviously, yeah, I think that Toto and Christian have the greatest respect for each other, but I also think that sometimes they know how to play the party line and they know how to do it. So yeah, be interested to see how that one pans out. Other bits of news, we've got Carlos saying that he could have won the Miami Grand Prix if they had pitted one lap later. I don't believe you, Carlos. I'm afraid to say, I don't think you had the pace all weekend. McLaren releasing a statement on Donald Trump. This was huge news in the world of Formula One. So Donald Trump originally tried to organise a fundraiser for Miami. That was turned down. And then he turned up in the pits, basically, doing a garage tour for McLaren, talking to Lando, greeting Lando, and also greeting the top three finishers. People talking that it wasn't a political statement. I think that any politician who's running for an election is making a political statement by just appearing. He obviously had his, you know, Make America Great Again cap on. That's a statement in itself. I think it was bad by the FIA and Formula One to get involved in this. He's a polarising figure. Most politicians are a polarising figure, but we all know the controversy that's going on with Donald Trump, with, yeah, the fact that he's in court at the moment. He's obviously had those impeachment charges that were put against him. Now, these are, you know, at the moment, no court's ruled on it. But even so, when you've got someone who's seeking an election and is probably only there to further their personal appearance, I think Formula One management and the FIA, whatever their political, you know, whatever their political, you know, allegiance is, should have stayed clear of that one. We don't do it for the drivers. And I think they created a rod for their back by doing that, to be honest. They gave someone who's actively involved in an election a platform, ultimately, and that platform will go out to millions and millions of people. So I think that they played a bad card on this one. McLaren put out a statement saying that they're a non-political organisation after being obviously filmed with Donald Trump. However, they respect and recognise the office of the President of the United States. And when the request was made to visit on race day, it was accepted alongside the president of the FIA and obviously the CEO of Liberty Media and Formula One. So what that's saying is, what McLaren is saying is, they didn't invite Donald Trump, as was first reported by certain media outlets and by all across social media. They were asked to host him by Formula One and by the FIA. Now, whilst I agree that it shouldn't have happened, I don't think that Donald Trump should have been anywhere near the racetrack. So I think, like I said, any person coming to a race day is doing it for a personal gain, especially in election year. So anything he did was for election purposes. And I think that they put McLaren in a very awkward predicament of what do they do. Because ultimately, you've got the two governing body, you've got the governing body and the organisers of Formula One asking you to host him. It made it very difficult for McLaren to say no. And I'm sure that McLaren were well aware of the optics and all of the stuff they do in terms of their incentives, which directly conflicts what obviously Donald Trump's policies were and possibly are going into election. I don't know enough about American politics to get involved in that. But from what I've read and seen, it was a poor move on everyone's part. And I think it's one that put McLaren very much in a really bad position, and one that I don't feel was wholly McLaren's fault, but I think the whole situation should have and could have been handled a hell of a lot better, to be honest. So that's all I'm going to want to say on that one. Like I say, people will go in and out of that one. People will always have an opinion on politics. I prefer to stick away from that. In Formula One, I want to see cars on track. I don't want to see politicians getting involved. I'm not particularly a fan of the House of Senate getting involved either, to be honest. It should be sorted out in-house, but there we have it, unfortunately. Red Bull's 2026 engine partner, Ford, reiterating that they, you know, Adrian leaving doesn't impact on them at all. They fully intend to stay committed to produce that engine for Red Bull powertrains, and they don't see it going anywhere else on that one. Carlos Sainz saying that Pirelli's conservative on the Miami Grand Prix tires and should consider a softer tire to enlighten the show next year. I agree with you, Carlos. I want to see some tire wear. I want to see some strategy calls. I want to see some movement in terms of, you know, not just boxing off, covering each other off. Let's see some movement on there on that one. What else did we have last week? We've got Lando was fined €50,000, €25,000 he's had to pay, €25,000 suspended for crossing a low track during a sprint race. Seward saying that Lewis escaped penalty on his lap one incident because it was impossible to judge that one driver had been predominantly or wholly to blame for what happened. So that was when Lewis seemed to cause the Constantino effect. There was lots going on. There was, I think, Lance Stroll involved in it as well, but ultimately Lewis got away with it. Alonso then saying that Lewis escaped penalty for that one incident because he's not Spanish, and he will be seeking the FIA president. So what Alonso's effectively saying here is that stewards are being biased towards the British drivers, or certainly non-Spanish drivers, like Fernando. Well, there's some truth in that. It means we've seen it's a real grey area. We know that the stewards have made some questionable calls, and we also know that actually the stewards need to get a lot better. And I think that the FIA need to look at the whole of stewardship. But it's very hard. The president of the FIA can't intervene with picking stewards because then he would be accused of race fixing, I'm sure, which I'm sure that's something he doesn't want to get involved in or get accused of. So it makes it very hard. From what I can gather from the within the FIA, and I've spoken to a couple of people, they said that the FIA stewards are sort of not anything to do with Mohammed Ben Sulayem in the sense of he delegates that to the right people and they then choose the stewards. So what I'm saying is he doesn't want to be personally involved in that because he doesn't want to be seen as influencing who should be a steward for a Grand Prix, despite some of their questionable performances. So it's a real interesting debate on whether or not he should be getting involved or whether or not we just need the overall of the process through the Royal Motorsport Council to make it a lot more sort of above board and valid and to eliminate all of those things. I would say we've got Aston Martin call for a right of appeal for Fernando Alonso for his penalty in China. That was dismissed. Aston Martin said they had new camera evidence. The FIA didn't even hear it. They basically let the teams break curfew, come to the stewards hearing and said that they don't believe it was enough that to get an appeal overturned. The first thing you've got to do is prove that you've got evidence that wasn't available at the time that's significant. The FIA said this evidence wasn't and dismissed it on that basis. Carlos Sainz says that the reports that he turned down Audi offers are actually untrue. Audi, on the other hand, have came out this week and said that they'd like to sign Carlos Sainz. So, yeah, that one's getting a lot more traction. We know that's where it's most likely Carlos is going to be heading. That's for sure. Nico Hülkenberg says that the Audi CEO, Andreas Seidel, was the driving factor in his Audi move. Obviously, worked with him before, former McLaren guy, of course. Andreas Seidel is moved over to Audi F1, has been overseeing the transition from Sauber to Audi. Obviously, big impact in Nico Hülkenberg changing over, that's for sure. We had Lewis Hamilton refusing to rule out Adrian Newey to Ferrari, obviously, where he just talked about that Adrian would be top of his list if he wanted to, gave a very sly wink, which sent social media into meltdown over that one. Ferrari with their blue livery. For those who follow me on social media, you'll see that I've managed to get a hold of the shirt. The shirt is gorgeous. The colour's gorgeous. The livery was crap. I don't know what Ferrari did with the livery. They teased so much, and it was a bit like Alpine in the camo one where we all felt catfish when the covers come off it. Announced a new multi-year partnership with HP as their new sponsor. So they are Scuderia Ferrari HP going forward. That's the name of the team. And yeah, obviously a really big cash injection for the Ferrari team worth, we reckon, about $100 million that Oracle pay, could be more for the Red Bull sponsorship. So really great to see them get on board with that one. Might just pay for Adrian Newey's services after all, won't it? We've got Honda president saying that works in line with their objectives for their engine. A lot of talk about whether or not Honda's engine will be good enough. We know that Honda are going to struggle. A lot of the Honda engineers went to Red Bull powertrains when they're not so leaving, so they're having to rely on bringing people back. So there is a big debate about whether or not this Honda engine is going to be as good as the current one that's sat in the Red Bull and the Visa Cash App RB. So that one remains to be seen. One to keep an eye on. It's certainly going to be interesting. So, yeah, there you go. That's your Espresso news for the week. Don't think I've missed anything, but if I haven't, like I said earlier, drop me a follow on social media. You can get daily headlines straight to your phone, first thing in the morning, catch the headlines, what's going on in the world of Formula One at a glance, and keep it up to date with all of the latest info from a source that's reliable and trustworthy, is what I would say on that one. So thanks very much for that one. And that brings us on to the final part of the show, which is, of course, the takeaway. Right, so the takeaway section. Now, I've got a vision for the takeaway section, but as a listener of the podcast, I need your help. Now, what I want this podcast to be is I want it to be interactive. I host a live on TikTok on a Tuesday evening, normally around 9 p.m. If you do ever want to join it, drop in, where basically I just answer questions chucked to me in the comments. So people who follow me or don't follow me come onto live and they ask me all questions about Formula One or my opinion on certain topics. I want to bring that to the podcast. So what I want to do is I'm going to put a post up on social media. I'm going to put it across all the platforms. As I said, that's at F1 Coffee Corner, if you're not already following. And I want you to just drop into the comments just anything you want me to discuss on the podcast for the takeaway, we're going to call it. So the takeaway section is the part where I'm going to read out and answer some of your questions and debate some of the things that you want me to talk about. So whether or not you want to know what's going on with the driver, whether or not you want to know about a rule change, some clarification, something explained. I just want you to just get in touch via whatever way is easiest for you. Put it in there. Put your name if you want your name read out. More than happy to share a name, providing you are. If not, just put on there, don't want name read out. And I'll just share the actual question and I'll give you an answer on the following podcast. And then what I'll do is I'll clip it into my social media as well so you can see that it's been answered. So hopefully that will drive some real sort of sense of belonging for the podcast, that you are part of the podcast. Because ultimately, as I've said many times, I'm a guy in a shed. I used to be in the kitchen. My wife's put me in the shed now. And this is my vision to bring the podcast to you. And I can only do that with people listening and people interacting. So I appreciate everyone. And I just want to throw something back out there where actually there's a section of the podcast which is really handy to answer some questions, to, you know, gain some knowledge, to maybe get my opinion on something. And I really want to find a way to interact and get that one across. So keep your eye out on the post, contact me anyway, yeah, message, email, whichever way you want to do it. But yeah, if you've got something that you want answered on the takeaway on next week's show, drop it into the comments, get in touch. We'll read out and we'll get you an answer as well. And if you want to, a little bit of a shout out. So that's all I've pretty much got this weekend, this week, I should say. In terms of what's up for me, I've got a busy couple of weekends in terms of race weekends. So next week, I won a competition to go to the F1 Arcade down in London. Then I've got an evening in Nigel Mansell, as I alluded to last week. And then I'm going to another watch party in London for the Monaco Grand Prix as well. So a busy month ahead with back-to-back races and back-to-back watch parties. The second one's going to be a lot different. I'll give you some more details on that one. And the big news from last week, for those of you who tuned into last week's podcast, where we'll be going on our first ever Grand Prix abroad, it is Las Vegas. That's right. We are going to Vegas. So we've booked our flights. We've booked our hotel. We yet to book tickets. We shop around to see what deals are available on tickets. So if anyone knows of any good sort of deals, we don't want German admissions standing because I don't want Dad to stand. So if anyone's been to Vegas or sees anything on social medias, or, you know, sees anything which you think might be interested, please tag me. Like I say, we still got tickets. We're not in any rush to buy them. We don't go until November. We're, what, 199 days away from going. So from that point of view, we've got plenty of time. So I think that's it for this week. As I said at the top end of the show, if you haven't already, please hit that like, follow, subscribe button, whatever is available to you on the platform you're listening to this podcast on. And without, you know, further ado, I won't keep too much more of your day. I will see you all for the Imola preview next week and a countdown to what promises to be the biggest updates of the season for the Formula One car. So, Sports Social Podcast Network. All to pay for. And of course, 30 years since we lost Roland Ratzenberger and Ayrton Senna. So, Imola is going to be emotional. I will say goodbye. See you all on next episode.